Solomon wanted wisdom more than anything else, and God gave it to him. Now, usually, the only time we give much thought to what we really, really want most is when we dream about winning the lottery. If you're on a long car trip, this can be a fun conversation. Everyone in the car, you have to go around and say, what would you do if you won the lottery? Now, of course, there's always some self-righteous do-gooder in the car who will drone on about how they have everything they need and they would give most of it away. So once you take the next exit and drop that person off, you can then carry on with an enjoyable conversation. So if I won the lottery, one of the first things I would do, I would hire a staff that includes a masseuse and a hairdresser on call in my home each morning. If I could just begin each day with a massage and a haircut, I'd feel like I'd be a much better human being. There are all kinds of fairy tales that turn on someone getting three wishes, right? You've heard many of these. One of these tales involves a simple woodcutter and his wife. When the woodcutter fells a tree in the forest, a fairy's wings are trapped beneath the tree, and the fairy begs the woodcutter for help. The woodcutter frees the fairy, and so the fairy grants the woodcutter three wishes. The woodcutter races home to share this exciting news with his wife. Prepare a feast, he tells his wife. We only have potatoes, she says. I sure wish we had some sausage. And boom, sausage appears on the table. Oh, says the husband, you've already used up one of our wishes. I wish those sausages were stuck up your nose. And boom, the woman has sausages stuck in her nose. And they worked, but they could not get them out. And so the poor couple finally realized that their third and final wish must be used to get the sausage out of the woman's nose. But in the end, they realized that they were already happy before they had the three wishes. Aww. Now, the moral of that tale seems to be that we shouldn't wish for anything. We shouldn't dream about winning the lottery. And yet, our life with God appears to involve the prayerful, ongoing reflection on what we really want. I believe that God meets us different points in our lives to ask us this question: what do you want? And what we wanted 5 years ago or 10 years ago may not be what we want today, right? We might want something different. But it takes great courage for us to face the question and to face the answer that wells up in us when we ask it. It's a wonderful question, really. I know sometimes it feels a little bit too good to be true. What do I really want? It can also be a frightening question. What if I don't know what I want? What if I can't figure it out? Or what if saying what I want, saying it out loud, even if just to myself, what if that makes me feel uncomfortable or vulnerable? What if identifying what I want sheds light on the kind of person I've become? And what if I don't love what that looks like? What if stating what I really want sets me up for disappointment? Because all of us know we don't always get what we want. So I can hear the various things that are tumbling around in your mind. They're in my mind too. We might be tempted to think, here we go, playing around with silly questions that don't really matter. Some of you might be thinking, hey, look, I'm busy. I don't have time to worry about what I want. I've got tasks. I've got responsibilities. I've got a job. I've got a family to care for. I'm overwhelmed by all sorts of obligations and responsibilities and expectations, and I don't have time to sit around dreaming about what I want. That's a luxury I don't have. Okay. Others of you may be thinking, well, I've never been asked the question this bluntly, this directly, what do I want? And I don't even know how to get in touch with what I want. I have all sorts of desires coursing through me. I want all sorts of things, and I'm not even sure how I would start sorting all that out to answer the question. Okay. Others of you might be thinking, well, I don't want big things. I just want little things. I want a stable job and a steady income. I want enough food, so I'm not worried. I want friends. I want to lose weight. I want to be in better health. I want to be free of pain. I want to be out of this depression. So I'm not thinking about big things that I want. I just want some small things. I'm not greedy. I just like to have a few smaller adjustments to my life that would make a big difference in how I live and how my life feels. Okay. All those objections make perfect sense to me. I thought of them because I had them. They're my own. So I think you have a right to these objections. Most of us are busy. We have a lot to do. It's hard to find the energy or the creativity or the stillness in the midst of all that every day requires of us to figure out what it is we want. How would you ever answer that question? And I agree that none of us have very much training or skill in asking and answering this question. What do we want? So I wasn't trying to ask you to do something difficult. I wasn't trying to add to your burdens. Life is confusing. It asks a lot of different things of us. It's just that there's this story of God appearing to King Solomon and asking him what he wants. God appears to King Solomon in a dream and says, quote, "What would you like for me to give you?" And that question made me wonder that was just for Solomon, or whether that's a question that God might ask of all of us, of you and of me. So the question feels like not just another thing to the add to the end of your long to-do list. If it feels that way, I'd say don't bother with it. But on the other hand, there may be some of us here this morning who need this question. There may be some of us here for whom the asking of it in such a blunt, direct way feels like good news to just have time and space to consider the question. It might come to you this morning like a song that fills your soul, or like a beautiful image that overwhelms you with delight. It won't fix everything that's wrong with you, of course, but it might welcome you onto a path that leads you forward in hope, as God invites you to put one foot in front of the other. What do you want? You've heard this question before at other times in your life, and you either answered it or you didn't. But now it comes around to you again, not from me, the preacher, and it's not to me that you should worry about giving an answer. This is a question that crystallizes deep within your own life and experience, and it's the living God who asks you the question, but not from some far off place. The question comes to you from your own guts. What do you want? Now let me come back to King Solomon for a minute. God appears to him in a dream. Ask me for whatever you want me to give you. It's an open question. It's a blank check. The question comes from the living God, who's the creator of all that exists, the generous source, the life force that holds all things together and draws everything into the future. So we can assume that everything's on the table. This is a generous question. Solomon, what can I give you? What Solomon asks for, what Stephanie explored with the kids, what he asks for is wisdom or discernment. Quote, "Give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong," verse 9. Now, was it easy for King Solomon to ask for wisdom? I don't think so. He appears in Israel storytelling as a complicated and ambiguous character. Not unlike his father, King David, and not unlike all of us, Solomon is a mixed bag. You might notice, if you look at the reference for our scripture reading today, we skipped over a whole chunk, the bulk of chapter 2, and you may be thinking, well, what was in there that we jumped over? That material describes how newly crowned King Solomon murdered his own brother Adonijah, murdered his father's military commander Joab, and murdered a man named Shimei simply because he had the audacity to criticize his father, King David. That is, Israel remembered King Solomon as a man with divided loyalties, a person who would resort to violence to secure his own claim to the throne. And even more so, our reading today appears to criticize Solomon for his half-hearted devotion to God. Apparently, Solomon worshipped other gods when he worshipped, offered sacrifices and burned incense at the various regional high places that Israel was used. So it appears that Solomon was a complicated man, pulled in different directions. He loved the Lord and he sought to be God's servant, but he also loved power and he was willing to use violence. He was willing to cut corners or serve other gods when that proved convenient. And I say all this simply to point out that Solomon was just like us. He was of more than one mind. He had trouble sorting out what it was he wanted. He was a human being with fractured allegiances, and it was to this messy, compromised, divided life that God appeared in a dream asking, "What is it you really want?" And Solomon asked for wisdom to govern, discernment to know right from wrong and to do the right. Now notice that Solomon's answer was not a dream of escape, right? He wasn't dreaming of getting out of his responsibilities so that he could live on a beach. That's where my mind usually goes, right? If I can get whatever I want out of this mess and into something that's much easier. That's not his dream. His request was that he would have what he needed to be the person that God had called him to be. Now, I don't think this would be a very good sermon if the whole point of the sermon was basically to say, well, Solomon wanted wisdom more than anything else, so that's what you should want too, right? I've heard sermons like that. I could do that. That doesn't sound very interesting to me. I think Solomon asked for wisdom because he was a king. He was in charge of governing. That's what God had called him to do. And that particular calling and role, what he needed more than anything else was wisdom, so that's why he asked for it. Now, don't get me wrong. Wisdom is a wonderful thing. I don't think you'd go wrong if you ask God for wisdom. In fact, all of us as God's people are enjoined to pray continuously for more wisdom. The books of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Job, and Song of Solomon, they're all considered wisdom literature. That's how Israel understood those texts. They are a literature for helping God's people grow in wisdom. Jesus' famous Sermon on the Mount ends by exhorting us to be wise, like the man who built his home on the rock, to do what Jesus has called us to do. The book of James says, quote, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." That's James 1:5. Wisdom is a gift from God. It's necessary for faithful living. But is it the only thing we're allowed to ask for? I don't think so. I don't know about you, but I don't like it when I'm asked a question by someone else and there's some sort of assumed answer already baked in. Have you had people do this to you? It's a question, but it's not really a question because they already know the answer. It's sort of a trick. You're supposed to guess what they want to hear. I don't like that. It's not really a question. Feels more passive-aggressive. So I don't think we can really feel the wonderful force and the good news in front of this question, what do you want, if it's all just a trick to get us to say, well, I guess I'm supposed to want wisdom. Maybe you want something else. Maybe you want a new day or another chance. Maybe you want to feel clean instead of dirty. Maybe you want to feel proud instead of ashamed. Maybe you want to feel loved instead of overlooked. Maybe you want to be valued. Maybe you want respect or friendship or freedom. Maybe you want better opportunities for yourself. Maybe you want a chance to use your gifts. Maybe you want more delight or more pleasure or more joy in life. Maybe you want relief from pain or nagging depression. Maybe you want something that doesn't sound all that profound, but it might be really, really important to you, a dog, or a better mattress, or a raise at work, or a new dress, or a reliable car. I don't know. Friends, here's the good news. The question comes to you today as a rather shy and quiet thing. It has been here before. It has nudged you already at different times in your life. Maybe you had an answer then and maybe you didn't, but now the question is back again, this relentless, wonderful, annoying, piercing, complicated question, what do you want? We should never make light of those times that God breaks into our heart to speak to us, but neither should we worry that God will lose patience with us if we get it wrong or fail to answer. God will always be back. The Spirit will do its work now, and it will come to us, and it will do its work again. And through our lives, I would imagine we will find ourselves face to face with this question a great number of times, and your answer at age 6 or 16 will probably differ considerably from your answer at 36 or 66 or 86. You might want to see your whole life as a prayer in that way. Over the course of time, you keep refining your desires, what you want. You try out new lines. You imagine yourself this way and then that way. And it's all a kind of rehearsal, really. In a way, our lives are nothing but one long extended response to God's grace. Our lives, from beginning to end, they are our real answer to the question, what do we want? So in the end, friends, you don't have to say anything at all. Your life is already your answer. Your life in its excitement and its boredom, your life in its high and low points, your life in public and in secret, your life in all you've done and in all you've failed to do, all of it. All you've said and done and thought and prayed and dreamed and desired, all of it will be your answer to the God who comes to you in the dream saying, ask for whatever you want me to give you. So I apologize for failing to offer you any answers today, but sometimes a question is better.